Cable News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
To paraphrase a famous British actor, dying is easy, relationships are hard. Our in-depth guest today has written a new book designed to make that relationship part a little easier. The book is called Make Love Better: How to Own Your Story, Connect with Your Partner, and Deepen Your Relationship Practice. The author is Jan Dworkin, a Portland-based couples therapist and relationship coach. Make Love Better recently, very recently, just about a few days ago, won a 2019 Best Book Awards in the self-help relationships category. And we're fortunate to have Jan with us now live in the KBOO studios to talk about the book and how to deepen our own relationships. Jan Dworkin, thanks very much for coming into KBOO.
Thank you for having me, Ken. I'm happy to be here.
Now, Jan, though Make Love Better can be considered a self-help book, and at least it recently won the Best Book Award in that category. Congratulations on that, by the way. You also include a lot of your own personal story. Did the book originate as a memoir?
Well, in fact, I did write a version that was a memoir some years back. But interestingly enough, that memoir was really about me working out my own relationship issues.
And there's still some of that in the book.
Well, I think hopefully in the book, my relationship issues, I've sort of understood and I've been able to process them in such a way that they become hopefully useful for other people.
They become lessons in the book, in fact.
Exactly. Whereas that first memoir that I wrote, I think I was still seeking revenge and working out my issues. And I was using it as more of a journal than really a learning tool for others. So I decided at that time not to try to publish it.
Now, what was, I guess those life lessons then, was the reason for including all the personal material? I mean, after working it out on your own, and so it's no longer a memoir, it's now really a self-help book, but using your own story as illustrations. You mentioned two marriages, you've lived with three partners, and you also mentioned many not-so-wonderful dates that you gathered from the internet, online. So what was the reason for that? Was, again, just to kind of show other people that everybody has problems with relationships. There's no perfect, even though you're got a doctorate, you're not perfect at it.
Exactly. I'm far from perfect at it, and none of us are. And I think really my deepest motivation was to sort of eliminate some of the shame and isolation and alienation that people feel when they're going through very, very difficult relationship processes and times, because most of that is hidden from the general public and even from our friends and community and family. People on social media don't usually show up and talk about their worst problems that they're having at home. So I felt so alone when I was going through my own hardships in relationship, and I felt like I wanted my troubles to somehow be made useful for other people. And I didn't want others to have to experience the kind of isolation and despair, really, that I was experiencing, and that's what motivated my book.
And you actually have a very interesting perspective on what some people might call relationship failures.
Yes, I do.
You regard them more as lessons to learn.
Exactly.
And early in your career, you went to Zurich. I think you were studying for an MFA here, and you ended up with a Jungian analyst there in Zurich. And you have a quote from Jung himself in the book, which I think helps describe your own approach, so I'll read it. "The serious problems in life, however, are not fully solved. If ever they should appear to be so, it's a sure sign that something has been lost. The meaning and purpose of a problem seems to lie not in its solution, but in our working at it incessantly." Can you talk about that bit of wisdom and how it influenced your work and the book?
I'm really touched, Ken, that you chose that quote and that you're asking me about it, because it's something that's very, very meaningful to me. And I think this whole idea of repeating experiences is something that is very universal, but something that people tend to very often criticize themselves for, especially in relationships. When you work with people in therapeutic practice, they often say, "Why did I do that again? And why did I choose the same kind of partner? And I'm really poor at choosing, and I keep repeating my mistakes." And the reason we repeat things is because we can't learn unless we get another chance to practice.
And you even mentioned the cult movie Groundhog Day.
Exactly.
where the main character goes through that exact exercise, just reliving the same day until he gets it right.
Exactly. And many of us experience our relationships like Groundhog Days over and over again. It's like you meet somebody, and when you first meet them and you go on a few dates, you think they're totally different than anybody you ever got together with before. But after living with them a year, you find out, oh my God, I'm in the same situation again. You know, most people feel despairing about that. But another way to look at it is, here's a chance. If I learn some new skills and I learn some things about myself and I really develop self-awareness and I really develop a relationship practice, maybe I could try something different this time. It's even if the other is the same, I can show up differently. And then maybe something transpires that's completely unknown.
And that's really a tack that you take throughout the book.
Yes.
There's really no failures. They're all learning experiences.
Yes, exactly.
Now, the book itself is divided into three parts. Own it, the world inside.
Mm-hmm.
Connect, the world between. And the final section is deepen, the world around. And that, of course, mirrors the book's subtitle, How to Own Your Story, Connect with Your Partner, and Deepen Your Relationship Practice. Why'd you format the book in this way? Is that how you approach a therapy, kind of that personal story, then the relationship itself, and then that relationship in the context of everything else that's going on in that person's life?
That's exactly right. I mean, there's so many different aspects of that I could speak about. But basically, I think the more self-awareness you have and the more you know yourself, the more you're able to show up in relationship in a way where the emphasis is on how you can change your behavior as opposed to how you can change your partner. Because most of us emphasize how we can change our partner.
And we really cannot be very successful at that.
It doesn't work all that well, unfortunately. And believe me, I've tried. But unfortunately, it doesn't work all that well. And then once you do connect with somebody and you show up with a little bit more awareness about yourself, there's so many things that have to be navigated in relationship. Power, communication, sex, all of these interpersonal issues that really we need skills to deal with and to navigate. And most of us don't learn
those skills. We don't have relationship skills. It's not taught in school.
Exactly. So I teach a lot of those skills in the book. And then our relationships are embedded in the world around us. And we can't really think about our relationships in isolation, because all of the social issues and all of the world issues and the diversity issues and the power dynamics that exist and the inequities that exist in the world also exist between people in relationship. And unless we take in the social context, we can work on our personal psychologies and our interpersonal relationship forever. But unless we really look at social injustice and imbalances and how they're impacting us in how we relate to our partners, then we can only go so far.
Mm-hmm. Now, you start off with the very personal in the book, and that's the individual, him or herself.
Mm-hmm.
And you give a good example of childhood dreams. Again, that might be part of your Jungian background.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned Freud in the book, too. So you had a childhood dream of based on a real experience of a
yes.
beggar chasing
yes.
you, a blind beggar. And then
yes.
There was one that you saw that was limbless, without
yes.
arms and legs. And these kind of nightmares occurred where these characters, I guess, intensified.
That's right.
in your brain, in your dream world,
exactly.
Were coming after you.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the story that you garnered from that?
Yes, that's also a very profound part of my own personal path and my personal journey. One, I was chased by these disabled people or so-called crippled people in my childhood dream. And those figures became very meaningful to me. And so in my dream, I turned away from them. I ran away from them. But my life journey has been a journey of turning towards that part of myself and turning towards my own vulnerability and my own limitations and my own so-called mistakes and the parts of myself that are imperfect, and learning how to embrace those, not just embrace those parts, but see them as some of the most powerful parts of myself. Now, interestingly enough, those patterns that occur in our childhood dreams also repeat in our relationships. So I tended to have relationships with people that I sometimes experienced as beggars, that I had to give so much, or I had to overgive. Or at other times in relationship, I found myself being so needy that I felt that I was sometimes begging for my partner's love. So those themes repeated throughout my life and repeated in my relationships.
And that's something that when you're working with a couple or, well, an individual at first in therapy, you would ask them if they are certain dreams that they remember from their childhood, and then try to find a little bit meaning in that and maybe how their life and their relationship experience has mirrored that.
Absolutely. And the same thing for couples' dreams. Couples also have what I call a childhood dreams or origin dreams. the funny stories, the interesting things that happen when they got, when they first get together, the uncanny events.
But reality, though, it actually happened to them, and it becomes almost kind of a fable or
like a pattern or a blueprint for things that are going to happen again and again in the relationship. Or sometimes nighttime dreams. Sometimes the first time somebody spends the night in the bed with the new partner, they have a dream, and those dreams also are very significant.
Now, here's a very important part I want to get to, because you make it a big part of the book. You write in the book's introduction, when it comes to relationships and most things, I do not have a normal to promote. In fact, I'm against the idea of normality, especially in the realm of love. How would you describe that normality, and why can it be non-productive or even harmful?
I mean, just the whole heteronormative ideal, the idea that a cisgendered woman and a cisgendered man are supposed to come together in relationship and have a couple of children and behave in a certain way and have jobs and achieve certain financial goals, and all of that pressure from society to be normal is extremely destructive, because many of us are so individual, and many of us don't fit in.
That normality doesn't apply to most people, I would think.
To many, many people. And many of us have been hurt and injured by our families, who wanted us to show up in a particular kind of way in order to reflect them, or by society, who puts its ideals onto us. And I'm just against all of that. I think it's very destructive.
Now, towards the end of the book, and this is where you're putting relationships in that wider context, you mentioned some really interesting statistics from the Pew Research Center survey. Mm-hmm. There was one 2015 survey they did where they found that all newlyweds in the U.S. had a partner, or 70% of all newlyweds mm-hmm. had a partner of a different race or mm-hmm. ethnic group. Mm-hmm. And according to a more recent polling they did in 2017, 62% of Americans support same-sex marriage. And that was up from 35% just about 15, 16 years earlier. Incredible in terms of the increase there.
Yes.
And I know young people that I know, it's almost like a given. You know, what's so strange about same-sex relationships?
Exactly.
It's usually old people who seem to bear those prejudices. Mm-hmm. That was something you definitely reflect in the book. Can you talk about some of those challenges that you find in these relationships and how you help couples deal with them, say, same-sex or people of different ethnic groups or races?
Well, everybody is so different that I can't really generalize about what kinds of struggles that the individuals within the relationship have. However, if you are in a relationship that is in any way a challenge to mainstream norms, you have extra challenges that come from the society and the culture itself. So you not only have the challenges of just being two diverse human beings trying to get along, and by diverse I mean just different people, with all of your internal differences and external differences, but then you have extra pressures from society, who are looking at you and expecting you to fail, or putting more pressure on you to succeed, or just watching you to see, can two people who are that different, or two people of the same gender, how do they do raising children together?
Yes.
And what we're testing, we're looking at you, the eyes are on you in the world in a different way that if you're a mainstream couple, if you're more typical, then you don't have that kind of pressure.
Yeah, those are kind of instances where I guess it's a difficult. You're almost like a test case.
Exactly.
Okay, same-sex marriage, is that going to work? Interracial marriage, is that going to work? And that just is a lot of added stress.
Exactly.
Now, most self-help books don't go into that, but you do that here.
No, I do also, because I think that couples that can work out those kinds of power issues and differences and imbalances and cultural differences in their relationship are doing that for themselves, but they're also helping the world by doing that. It's a deep belief of mine. So I really celebrate couples who are navigating power differences and diversity issues.
I had a lot more questions for you, but I probably have time for just one more, Jan. And this one, if there's one thing an individual listening today in a challenging relationship for any reason can start working on today, in addition to buying the book and reading and doing some of the exercises,
yes.
What would you suggest?
One suggestion? Ask me the question again. I don't think I understood it.
Oh, okay. If there's one thing that you can, one piece of advice where a person in a challenging relationship can start doing something positive, constructive for that relationship, what would you suggest? What would be that first step?
I think a first step is to just really study yourself and understand what you're bringing to the relationship that's difficult.
And that's in part one in the book,
the individual. But I also encourage people to have the courage also to leave relationships, especially if they're harmful to you.
Well, thank you, Jan. It's a very enlightening book. Again, I wish we had more time to go into it, but you can pick up a copy.
It was
published just about a week or so ago, and it's on sale everywhere. Good books are available. Jan, thanks very much for joining us at KBOO today.
Thank you for having me, Ken. It's great to be here.
We've been talking with Portland-based couples therapist and relationship coach Jan Dworkin about her new book, Make Love Better, How to Own Your Story, Connect with Your Partner, and Deepen Your Relationship Practice. The book recently won a 2019 Best Book Award in the Self-Help Relationship category. You can learn more about Jan and her work and her book online at janjorkin.com. This is Ken Jones for KBOO's News in Depth.